Okay. All right, next parrot. Rebbe Omer. Ezui derech yeshorah sheyivra lohana. Which is the right path that a person should choose for himself? So, Rebbe says like this. Difficult formulation. Kol shi teferes lo seho. It is a beautification, embellishment for the person who does it. V'seferes lo min ha'adam, which literally means, and it is something which is considered respected by the rest of the world. Okay. What exactly does that mean? The difficulty here is that the word teferis ordinarily means
glory,
some type of thing which is visible to others. So therefore, when you say kol shi teferis lo seho, what are you saying? You're saying that the person that does this activity, he receives teferis, right? So then what does teferis lo min adam mean? You've already said that the man receives some type of honor, glory from it, something which people which appeals to people, something which they like, which they respect. So, what does it mean? Kol shi teferes lo seho, that is teferes for the person who does it itself. Okay, so Rashi solves that problem by changing the meaning of the word teferes. Teferes lo seho. Shenoach lo v'hanoa v'gam b'nei odom nochim emeno. So Rashi's teferis doesn't mean over here something which is which connotes the idea of embellishment or honor or something which is relative to others, but teferis means something which gives him hanoa, which gives him a benefit. Okay, well, what exactly is that benefit? Let's see the Rambam. The Rambam actually explains the Mishnah the same way Rashi does, that the word teferis over here does not mean something which depends upon others, which is teferis, which means it gives it's something which others recognize. Rambam also agrees with that. He learns the word teferis means it's beneficial for him, beneficial, it's good for him. Okay, but the Rambam talks a little bit more about it. The Rambam's like this. Mevurhu, it is clear, shederech hayeshara hi hapulos hatovos asher bi'anam b'perikavei, that the right way are the good actions that we explained already in the fourth parak. The Rambam's way is, the Rambam wrote the Shemona Prakam first, he wrote like an introduction, eight chapters, and then every now and then he always refers to one of those chapters, he doesn't want to have to repeat it again and again. So over here he makes reference, he says, makes reference to what he explained already in the fourth chapter of his introduction, Shemona Prakam. He says, V'heim me'amailos ha'mamutzos. And these are from the ma'ilos ha'mamutzos, means the golden mean. The Rambam's, the famous golden mean. The person shouldn't be too much to extremes, he has to be in the middle. Okay? Shrilazar. He says, Mitneshe bohem yikne ha'odom l'nafsho tchuno chashuva, because through them a person will be able to obtain for himself a worthy type of character. V'yim in hago tovim b'nei adam, and therefore he will be able to deal properly with people. V'lamru teferes lo seho v'seferes lo min adam. Okay. Now it would be advisable really to take a look a little bit at paragraph A, since the Rambam mentioned it, that's really the essence of what this whole statement is based on paragraph A. So we really should take a look a little bit at what the Rambam says in paragraph A. It's an interesting paragraph, very interesting paragraph. I'd like you to just listen. I'll give you a brief summary of the paragraph. And I'd like you to tell me two things. One is what the Rambam is concerned about in the Perek. What's his main concern? And then secondly, what theoretical view emerges from what the Rambam says? Okay? Now, the thing is like this. You see, he says, he goes through at length, here more than anywhere else, the importance of being in between. Personally, he says there are different midos. There's anger, and then there's a person who is very meek. A person should be in between. And there's a person who's a tremendous Baal Taiva, another person who doesn't enjoy anything, who doesn't take any enjoyment out of life. Either way is no good. The Rambam says a person should be in between. And then he goes through, gives a whole list, and he gives the in-betweens. Then he mentions the difficulty is that people always make mistakes in these areas. He says, like, a person who is lazy, so people say, he's a man that's Sameach B'chalka. He'll make mistakes. It's very tricky.
What?
Right, the Rambam points out it's very tricky with this business of being in between, because a person can always delude himself. The Rambam doesn't give too many solutions. He just says that that's the way it is. The human mind can always take anything and twist it. So especially in the area of perfection, anything which is a chesaron, a person can always twist it in his favor. He mentions that. And then he says like this. He says, then he mentions the importance of a person living in the proper way, and actively being concerned with how his midas are, doing something to change them. And then he says like this. That's really the end of the essential part concerning how to be in between. Then he says like this. He says, what some people did, what some Hasidim did at different times, like Chazal, you see that they went to one side. Like, for instance, they didn't eat meat or drink wine, and they didn't have intercourse, and they didn't wear nice clothes, and they went alone in the deserts. He says, yes, yeah, both of this. He says the only reason they did this is because of because they knew that they had a problem that they had to remove. So they were concerned with removing that problem. So they tried to go to the other extreme in order to remove the problem, so that it was an action which was done because of refuah, like medicinal purposes. Yes. So the Rambam says that's one reason why you find stories among Chazal that they did some of these extreme things. He says another reason why they did it might have been because of they were concerned with the people in their society. People a lot of times have most times people have some type of imperfection, and it could be a social imperfection. So because of this social imperfection, they wanted to go to the other extreme because they served as models and examples for the society, some of them. So therefore, they had to be concerned with how other people look at them. So therefore, they had to go to extreme in order that the people in general should follow them and should remove a bad trait. He says that's another reason why they may have done this. Then the Rambam says, but when the fools, he says, when the fools saw these chassidim, that they did these actions, and they didn't know what their intention was, they thought these actions were good. And they did these actions, they emulated them, in order that they should be like these tzaddikim. And they would make their bodies suffer with all types of pain, and they would think that through this they've reached a very high level, and they did a great good. And this is the way to get close to God. As if, the Rambam says, as if God is the enemy of the body and wants to destroy it and annihilate it. He says, and they don't know that these actions are bad. And through them, a person will only receive harm to his soul. And these people are like those who know nothing about medicine, and they observed that a very good physician gave somebody who was sick a certain advice, gave him certain medication, gave him certain advice, and he told him not to eat certain foods, and through not eating the food, through abstaining from food, these people, this person became better. And this person was saved from a very great physical harm. So this fool said when he saw this, if this method will help to cure this person of this terrible disease, certainly, kavachomer, it will make a healthy person stronger. And it will add to his health. And he started to, this observer started to take this prescription and follow the advice of the physician. And he says, there is no doubt that this person will become sick. He says, so too are these people. He says, they have certainly an illness of the soul, without a doubt. So they think that by using these medications, they're going to become healthy. All right? Yeah. Now he says like this. He says, but this Torah, which perfects us, as God says, Torah Hashem Tamima Machimas Pesi, Meshivas Nafesh, the Torah which perfects us, he says, the Torah never commanded us in any of these things. But the Torah wanted that a person should be tivi, means he should live naturally. He should go in the middle road. He should eat what's mutterfin to eat, and he should drink what's mutterfin to drink in moderation. He says, and he should have intercourse in situations where it's mutter to have intercourse with moderation, and he should build the land with justice, and not that he should live in mountains or in caves. Not that he should wear clothes or inferior types of begotten. And not that he should torture and make his body suffer. But the Torah says, as a matter of fact, Torah says, by a nazir v'chipar alav me'asher chata l'nefesh, that the nazir has to bring a carbon. And they said, what kind of a, where was the sin? Where was the nazir sin? So he says, al shenim shemon atzma v'nayayin, because he didn't drink wine. So he says, now isn't it a kal v'chomer if a person only refrains from drinking wine? He has to have a kapara. So certainly a person who takes away from himself all enjoyments certainly needs a kapara. He says, and also from the words of our Nevi'im and from our Chachomim, we find that they always lived in moderation and they watched their bodies, just like the Torah was obligated them. And then he goes, he says that they, when they asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should they fast in Zechariah, should they fast one day a year? Yom Echad Bashana. I'm Yasmel HaKachalo. Ha'ev Keba Chodesh HaKamish Yenetzim. Zekashes Yizkum HaYishonim. So God answered that what they should do is, he told them what they should do is moderation. And Milos, he told them on the contrary, they shouldn't fast. He says, Mishpat emes shiftu v'chesed rachmasu ishis ochiv. So he gave him advice. He said, you should do kindness one to another. Mishpat, justice. And if there's this karma, Hashem tzvarko, somer v'yit, somer chmish, somer shvi'yit, somer siri, yil v'esid l'sasim l'simcha, l'madim tovim, emes v'shal mahavu. Okay? So he says, what does it mean, emes v'shal mahavu? He says, emes is milos ha-hegyonios, is the intellectual perfection, and Shalom is Midas and Milas Amidah. So God answered them, you don't need to fast. What you have to do is perfect yourself. A person should live with perfection, but God doesn't want a person to suffer. He says, now he goes back. He says, V'erzel, now I want to go back to the Inyan. He says, and if people will say, some people will say, from our nation, who Asher Nizdamu La'amim, he says. Nizdamu la'amim means that they follow the other nations. They became like the other nations. It means the Christians. Or the Indians is referring to also. That they cause, they have these masochistic type of rituals, yeah. Where they walk on coals or people cause themselves to suffer. And like the saints going out into the deserts. All these types of things. So Ram says, and if somebody from our nation who has been influenced, who is similar to the other nations, he says that who I am referring to, the Ram says, Shadvari Khan Einam Elohim, I am only referring to these people, says that the only reason that they're doing this is because they want to be a little bit on the safe side. That's their purpose. In other words, the Rambam says that the right thing is to be exactly in the middle, but he says also it's a person should be a little bit on the safe side. We one time asked the question, what does it mean? There's two middles, actually. There's the perfect middle, and then there's the middle which is... which a person has to be at in order to perfect himself, a little bit over. Right, we spoke about that at length one time. I'm not going to go through it again. But anyways, the Rambam's like this. The Rambam says, if a person will say that that's the reason why they're doing these things, so the Rambam says, this is a mistake. Why? Because he goes through, he says, the Torah only ossered certain things because the Torah wanted that we should be in between. And all the isser of the surim of the maicholos of food and of intercourse and the azhara against the prostitution and the ksuba and kedushin, all these halachas, he says. Vimkos einematers tam el asuris money nida v'aleda. He says all this is that we should go away from the side of taifa, he says. And we should be a little bit towards the other side. He says, and also what the Torah says about giving tzedakah and maisros, and this is the area that a person shouldn't be stingy. He says, this is really a little bit more than the middle point, he says. In order that we should be a little bit to the side of the other side. Because a person's tendencies, generally speaking, is more pulls them more towards stinginess than to be giving away money. So that's why you have to get him to the middle. You have to be a little bit more on one side. He says, this the Torah took care of. He says. And therefore, in most of the mitzvahs, you'll find all of them, that they're all machshir, kachos and nefesh. Like the Torah, asid nekama, and gulas adam, lasikam, lasitar, azov. He goes through the whole thing. And he says, v'chein they say v'atakum, v'adat v'nei zakenin, a person of respect. And the Rambam says, and if a fool, he says, "V'imbo adam asochol," and if a fool comes along without a doubt and thinks that he wants to add to these things, that he will make certain things that are permissible, he will asser. And he says more than what the Torah assered. And he will make inhibitions upon himself with regard to intercourse more than the Torah did. He says, and he'll give away his money to be more generous than the Torah recommended. He said he is doing an evil thing, and he doesn't know that he will be leaving pretty soon. He'll be leaving the moderation area completely, and it will cause him great harm. All right. Now, he says, Chazal also mentioned that, he's mentioned Chazal, he says, there's something that I have never seen anything more astonishing in the words of Chazal. I have never seen anything more astonishing than the words of Chazal in this area. And the Gemara says, in the ninth parak of Nedarim, the Gemara degrades people who make prohibitions upon themselves through Nedarim and Shruas. Because what happens is that they become filled with prohibitions. He says, and they said, Ravidi B'Shem Rav Yitzchak said, Lo dayach ma she'osr lecha ha-Torah, elo she'ata osr lecha dvar macherim, you're going to ask her other things? And this is precisely what I have been discussing, the Rambam says. That's basically it. Okay? Just tell me what was the Rambam concerned with in this parak? I mean, it's pretty obvious. But what is the first observation you have to make on this Rambam? And then we have to go a step further. What's the first observation you should make on this Rambam? What do you say? I just want to mention, I mean, the Rambam, people who add things to the Torah, the Rambam would definitely include, any addition to Rambam is bad, which means people who make certain rules and regulations about the color of clothes we have to wear or things like that. I mean, there is no doubt that any type of the Rambam means any type of new restrictions that are not found in the Torah is definitely, the Rambam says, an isser to do. It's an isser to do it, and anyone that does that is it's not, of course, if the person thinks it's a mitzvah or it's an avera to do such a thing, then he's over Bal Tosef. But if he just, let's say he just does it because he wants to, he's doing it because of our chaka. He wants to prevent himself from doing avera, so he decides that he has to wear, should restrict his clothing to certain types of clothes, I mean, certain colors. I mean, this is the clear in the Rambam is definitely, without a doubt, is an issur. It's an issur. It is bad. The Torah has already, the person who does that maintains the Torah system is not perfect. That God didn't devise the perfect system. He is adding his own perfection, making it a little better. That definitely, the Rambam is awesome. It is awesome. Such ideas are awesome. But the Rambam also traces those ideas to the other nations, which is true. We'll get back to that, why the other nations think that way. But I want to know right now, what is the main concern of the Rambam? What was the Rambam worried about? The Rambam wrote because the Rambam was concerned about people. That was the motivation for writing. What was he worried about? Very simple. Maybe you thought, maybe it's too simple, maybe someone thought. The Rambam was concerned in one word. If you take a look, you see he keeps talking about people who afflict themselves with the pains and inhibitions. And what is he worried about? He's worried about a person might not enjoy himself. Simple. The Rambam was concerned about one simple thing. He was worried. He was worried that a person might not enjoy himself. That a person might look at enjoyment as an evil. Physical enjoyment. They might look at that as something which is bad. And the Rambam says, that's the whole Rambam over here. The Rambam, he goes through that, he mentions the, like the other nations, and he says, he'll asser upon himself these things which are mutter. He talks about all areas, whether it's sexual, or whether it's appetitive, or whether it's in terms of his money, or whatever it might be. See? And he says that, lo dayach masha asra Torah. He winds up with that chazal. Not enough for the Torah asser for you. What is the Rambam telling you over here? It's an important message. Important message. And you won't find too many Balei Musar who give you this message. The Rambam is telling you that in order to have perfection, you have to enjoy yourself. That a person must have physical enjoyment. Simple, very simple statement. And the Rambam maintains that if you don't have physical enjoyment, a person doesn't enjoy his food. In moderation, shouldn't be extreme. The person doesn't enjoy his food, doesn't enjoy physical pleasures, mentions beer, intercourse, or whatever his money is, whatever it might be. If he feels that this is wrong to have that enjoyment, that's bad. Bad thing, he says. This is the philosophy of the other nations. Philosophy of the other nations is, and that's why the other nations, go to the extremes? They go to the extremes because they have one premise. The premise is, physical pleasure is bad. No good. And virtue is abstention from physical pleasure. That is the premise. And that's the premise in our society today, without a doubt. Even though people may indulge, but I'll explain to you why they indulge so much. And the reason why they indulge really is because they're not enjoying it so much. They're enjoying themselves, they wouldn't have to overindulge. But the truth of the matter is that the society, on the whole, really does praise a person who goes through suffering and who abstains from enjoying life, the physical life. As if, the Rambam puts it very beautifully, as if God is the enemy of the body. That's the philosophy. They believe that way. God is the enemy of the body, and therefore the person should not have any physical enjoyments. This, the Rambam says, is bad. Very bad thing. Harmful. It's a harmful thing. Okay? Before we go into the practical, let me just go into the philosophical a little bit. What is the theory, really, behind this Rambam? Why does it bother the Rambam if a person doesn't enjoy himself physically? The Rambam's concerned about that. If a man sits down to supper and doesn't enjoy the food because he feels that this is really not something that's good, the Rambam feels it's a terrible thing. He didn't enjoy himself. It's bad. Rambam mentions that he means a person has to have physical enjoyment. Why? Why is the Rambam concerned? Why is Rambam concerned about it? Yes? What do you say? But I want to understand. Is the Rambam concerned about it because the Rambam really believes that there's an inherent benefit in in physical pleasures. I mean, it seems to be the Rambam has like an Epicurean type of philosophy that the enjoyments of the goof are good. I mean, what is the Rambam? What's the Rambam's theory? Yes. But basically, what the Rambam's opinion is that perfection is a total picture. That's what the Rambam means. That perfection is a total picture. You see, in perfection, in human perfection, you cannot speak about individual parts. In other words, you cannot say that this particular thing is good, this particular thing is bad. You have to, in order for a person to have perfection, you have to look at the whole person. And the whole person, part of this person is, he is a physical being, which requires physical pleasures. That's part of his psychological nature. You know the bracha, Al kol ma shebara, b'rein nefesh rogz v'shvana, Al kol ma shebara l'achiyas b'hen nefesh kol choy. That taste explains it. It means, Al kol ma shebara l'achiyas b'hen nefesh kol choy, that God created besides, b'rein nefesh rogz v'shvana means he's the origin of the species, and Al kol ma shebara l'achiyas b'hen nefesh kol choy means that besides those things which he created for necessities, in order that the species should exist, he also created things for enjoyment. Different fruits. And if a person just wants to be alive, he needs very little. He could have bread, milk, and one or two more food items, and it's not be enough. But why did God create such a vast array of fruits and vegetables and different enjoyable things? Because type says that man should have enjoyment. So you see, man is a physical, a psychological, and an intellectual being. And the Rambam maintains that in order for man to have perfection, there has to be you have to deal with the whole of the personality. The whole personality has to be functioning properly. And if it isn't functioning properly, then there is no perfection. See, most people don't perceive it that way. Most people perceive, well, perfection is learning Torah. So therefore, all I'm going to do is learn Torah. And even though they do other things, yeah, but they don't feel that the other things are really important. What they're trying to do is not recognize themselves as a human being, but they're trying to attain a perfection of a malach, which, of course, results in harm, because they aren't, you see. So the Rambam's concept of perfection is a holistic one. You have to look at the total person. That's his concept in general. You read his medical writings also. The Rambam is very big on holistic medicine. He insisted on taking the whole individual, that the physical is tied in with the psychological, and whole and then the intellectual and the philosophical, everything, it's all one. The Rambam wrote to the Sultan. The Sultan had a physical ailment. The Rambam told him that his problem is a philosophical one. If he cures the philosophical problem, we'll get rid of the physical ailment. It's the Rambam. A strange prescription for a physician, right? Yeah, but the Rambam recognized that the soul is one. It's one thing. You can't break away one part from the other. And if a person is suffering from a philosophical malady, it will have repercussions in his physical. And if he doesn't cure that illness, so then he will remain physically ill. It's one entity. That's what the Rambam recognized. And that's basically what the Rambam is saying over here. Now, the Rambam maintains that as long as a person negates his need for physical enjoyment, he denies it, so he cannot enjoy it, he cannot really have the enjoyment, he will never be in the proper state of mind to enjoy Chachman, to enjoy Torah. That's what he maintains. He will never be in this proper state of mind. In order to be in the proper state of mind, you cannot deny what you need. I don't mean to say that a person should allow himself to. No person is foolish enough to starve himself. But it means if the person denies the fact that he needs the enjoyment of the food, you see, or if he denies the fact that it's important for him to have physical enjoyments in any area, the Rambam maintains that this person is living a foolish life, and since he denies the need for the enjoyment, he can't actually partake of the enjoyment, he will not have the state of mind. There's a certain state of mind that's in line with perfection. That's the whole idea of the middle path. The whole idea of the middle path is that there's a certain state of mind that's in line with perfection. If you don't achieve that state of mind, then you cannot have perfection. It's impossible. See, the thing is like this. In that state of mind, I just want to give you, it's hard for me to describe try to describe what the state is. In that state of mind, there's one important thing. It's a state of mind where a person feels very happy and very satisfied. But it's a state of mind in which the enjoyments, the physical enjoyments and the enjoyments of chokhmah, the intellectual, are not considered mutually exclusive. They're not considered mutually exclusive. See? That is basically the idea, like the Rambam says, from the other nations. The idea from the other nations is that certain things are certain things we should allow ourselves certain pleasures. Other pleasures are no good. See? The other pleasures are no good. But Yahadis maintains, the Rambam maintains, no, that a person must look at the total picture, and there is no tie to the sensory. There's no tie to the sensory. It's important that he enjoys himself physically. It's because that's what he is. See, he has to have that. He has to arrive at that situation, that state of mind. And if a person believes falsely that he tries to suppress enjoyments, his physical enjoyments, he will never be happy. Now, the tricky thing about it is, like the Rambam mentions before, that there's a problem with the naming process. In other words, a person who's lazy, establishing it terms. A person who's lazy, instead of lazy, they'll say Sameach Bechalka. Satisfied. See? The same problem goes on over here. Because the problem is as follows. That a person who's raised in a society, and I think specifically in a society like ours, he already, while it's true the society does partake of enjoyments, and he does partake of certain enjoyments, but you see, psychological enjoyment is a tricky thing, because a person can eat the same piece of meat as another person, and one person can be satisfied, another person not. Why? Because it depends on how the person views the activity. A person could view the activity, and of course, both people have good senses, so they taste the food, it tastes good. But one person can look at it as a bad thing to enjoy that taste. He has a sense of guilt associated with the enjoyment. Now, if there's a sense of guilt associated with the enjoyment, that nullifies the enjoyment. And since it nullifies the enjoyment, so he can't possibly arrive at that state of mind, the state of mind where he's really, where he feels satisfied. So it's not really, you can never look at the action per se. As a matter of fact, you can find people who indulge in physical enjoyments to a great degree, and yet you might say that they have very little enjoyment. Because it's not necessarily the act of indulgence per se, but a person is more than just a physical being. A person is a psychological being. Psychological being is Akov Halev Mikol, the ownership. The mind is very tricky. So many times a person could be indulging in a physical enjoyment, but the back of his mind, he feels guilty about it, doesn't enjoy it. This is bad. This is a very bad thing. Because he really can't enjoy himself, and since he can't have any enjoyment, so he's not in a good state of mind, not in a good frame of mind. So what I'm trying to say is that it's not such a simple thing. A little bit tricky. Now, I would like to speak a little bit in specific about the problems that we face. You know, like the Rambam says, every person who's ill, so the Rambam says, should go to a chacham. Why? He should go to a chacham. A chacham should discover what his illness is in order to be able to help him. So apparently there are different chuli hanefesh, not just one chuli hanefesh. Not so easy. I'd like to, if I can, to describe a little bit the chuli hanefesh that exists in our society, because I think that we're all victims of it to a certain degree. You see, what happens when a person thwarts or prevents a natural function is, the Rambam says, a great harm occurs to him. Yeah, it's true, a great harm. But we have to be a little more specific how the harm works. Rambam couldn't be specific because it depends on the situation. You see, in our society, I would say, and I think I've mentioned this before, that the problem in our society is that everything is always viewed in terms of accomplishment. Now, how this comes about is very simple. There are really natural enjoyments, natural pleasures that people should be having. But what happens is a philosophy is founded upon which enjoyment of the body is bad. Or it's allowed, but you're really not supposed to enjoy this. This is not good, not befitting a human being. See? Now, once it's frowned upon, and the people do not have that enjoyment, there is a substitute enjoyment that arises. What is a substitute enjoyment? It's a very simple one. It's precisely the enjoyment that results from abstaining. The enjoyment is that I am a person who was on a certain level that doesn't need to enjoy this because I'm on a higher level. See? So what happens is like this. What happens is that there's an exchange here. An exchange goes on. The exchange is you're trading. You're trading a physical enjoyment, physical psychological enjoyment, for an egoistic enjoyment. You see? That's what happens. It's an exchange. So I don't enjoy the steak, but simultaneously I enjoy the fact that I don't enjoy it because that makes me on a higher level. So basically it's a trade-off. Now, the thing is this. The trade-off is in the direction of a certain part of the mind, which, as you know, I mean, psychologists call the superego. But there is a certain part of the mind that has this type of enjoyment. Now, what happens is like this. What happens is that instead of having the enjoyment of the natural enjoyment, the first one that would come to the fore, the person trades it off for the second one, you see. Now, what happens is the second, everything starts becoming the second area. There is nothing anymore of physical enjoyment. Now you have a situation where there is a tremendous extreme, a person trying to derive pleasure to a tremendous degree from a certain area, which is precisely the extreme that the Rambam's talking about. See? Now we have to understand one thing before we go further. Why is the extreme bad? Why is the extreme bad? Okay. Any extreme is bad. Why is any extreme bad? Okay. That's true. There's one reason the extreme is bad is because when you have an extreme, it's very good. One reason the extreme is bad is because when you have an extreme, you lose the ability for the mind to work. Because if you're in the middle and you have things pulling you equally, evenly, then the mind can function. That's true. And once you're on the extreme, the pull becomes very strong, and there's no balance anymore, so the mind is taken over. That is definitely true. But there's another thing that's wrong with the extreme. Yes? It becomes a value system. There's no question about it. One thing. See? There's one more thing. I think this is at the bottom of the Rambam's theory. So the Rambam is presenting here a psychological theory. And this point is as follows. That in all the areas of enjoyment, there's a point of diminishing returns. In other words, all the enjoyments that we have in this life, there is a point of diminishing returns insofar as the enjoyment is concerned. So that if a person indulges to a certain degree, a person's hungry and he eats, he has enjoyment. He enjoys. He's hungry, he enjoys his food. He enjoys the taste, he enjoys everything. Very nice. But as he keeps on going and stuffing himself, there's a point, yes. The pleasure is diminished. Now, the truth of the matter is that a person that is in the extreme, what is he trying to do? He's trying to draw out more pleasure from a situation than the situation really allows.
Law of economics.
Right. It's a law of economics. So he would be much better off, you see, in a better state, if he had this particular thing where there was no compulsion in this area, but rather he was in between in this area and in between in other areas. See, the means is a situation where the person is deriving really the most from all the areas. That's why he is psychologically satisfied. But if a person tries to draw more out of one area, it shows a warped psyche. The person's trying to drain too much from one area. Other areas aren't being satisfied. And it's a point in that there's diminishing returns, so it could never be satisfied. It could never be. It becomes a compulsion. Okay? That's why it's bad. That's why the Rambam maintains that it's bad. That's why you have to have the in-between state. In-between state is the best state. Now, what I want to say is like this. With regard to our society, what happens is like this. Somebody mentioned before, it becomes a value when you have the extreme. the extreme in our society, really. I don't think that people, they say that people in our society are suffering from overindulgences and drugs. There is no doubt they're suffering from that. But I personally do not think the reason why they're suffering from that is because they're really Bali Taiva. Because to be a good Bali Taiva, you have to be a Chacham. You can't just leave it to chance. Like anything else in this world, in order to work it out, you have to be a Chacham. They were Bali Taiva. But they had it worked out. See? But this country, this society does not suffer from a system of Taiva. Because simply they don't have any system at all. It's not a philosophy. I mean, Epicureanism was a philosophy, but these people sat down, they worked it out. What exactly, how to work out the titles, you got to be careful. Whole plan, want to be successful.
You need
to be able to do it. It has to be a cheshmet. But this society is not on that level, because they just believe their emotions. And since they believe their emotions, there's no need to construct any types of philosophy. They just fall away. Any emotion that comes along, they're convinced that's the reality, and just go after it to their own doom. Yeah. But what happens, the real reason, I believe personally, the real reason why this society is suffering from overindulgence and from drugs and other things is because of what the Rambam says. Because there is no Shvilah Zav there. There is no golden mean. Since there is no golden mean, and since the society in specific takes on only one form of satisfaction, which is accomplishment, people become very frustrated who don't constantly give themselves accomplishments. And the truth of the matter is that in a big society, not too many people, how many people can really accomplish? So basically the philosophy of the society is something that lends itself to, on the whole, to tremendous unhappiness. So now, it takes away the plain pleasures from life, which prevents the person from being happy. But in specific, what I want to mention is there is a specific harm. A specific harm is as follows. It's two things, really. First of all, like we mentioned, if the balance isn't there and there's extremes, so you're trying to get too much out of an area, it becomes a frustration. Like the person, all a person can imagine in life is recognition. So the man will work all his life, go through tremendous pain for that one moment of recognition, which he might get or he might not get. Even if he gets it, it's a whole lifetime of toil where he's unsatisfied until he gets it. The moment he gets it, he's very happy. But it's not going to last, because it's really a need that he has that is a distortion and a compulsion rather than an enjoyment. So therefore, after a while, it builds up again. Precisely how it works, I'll go through some other time. But I just want to mention it right now, you know, in general. Now, that is the general harm, that he's not satisfied. But also there is a specific harm. The specific harm we mentioned before, there's a specific harm too. What's the specific harm? A certain value system is brought about. The value system is accomplishment. Therefore, the person's psyche is set only towards that type of a situation. Now, it just so happens... Direction? What is your profession? Your profession is Torah Lishma. And what is Torah Lishma? What is Torah Lishma, really? Torah Lishma is a situation where you require a certain state of mind. What is a state of mind? State of mind is, like the bracha says, Ha'arev not Hashem alakina es divrei sarascha b'frina. See? V'ni anachnu v'tzatzreinu kum lomdei sarascha Yodesh mecha v'lomdei sarascha l'shma. Okay. See? What does that mean? Ha'arev not. It means it has to be enjoyable. It has to be enjoyable. What does David HaMelech say? He's criticized for saying it, but the pasuk wasn't taken away. Zmiras lichlekecha, zmiras lichlekecha. It's like zmiras, it's like a song. Lule sarascha shiashui. If it wasn't for your Torah, shiashui means it's like a plaything, like a toy, like a child. You ever see a child play with a toy? He plays with a toy. He's just involved in the toy and the enjoyment. That really is Torah Lishma. That's the state of mind of Torah Lishma. Now, when you have a distortion like you have in our society, where things can only be viewed in terms of accomplishment, this whole phenomena becomes something that's impossible to reach. Because a person can't just sit down and enjoy the thoughts of Torah, be like a plaything. Can't do it. What is he accomplishing? So the only way he could learn is if he sets up a daf yomi, learns a blot a day, so every day he can walk away. That's it. Did my duff for today. Everything has to be accomplishment. Everything must be in terms of accomplishment. But there cannot be any enjoyment. Now, I agree that there is a certain point when a person starts to learn that he has to view it that way. Because you can't really make any headway. If a guy's going to sit down, he doesn't have to learn yet. He's going to sit down, he's going to want to enjoy himself. He's not ready for enjoyment. He has to go through a certain process of goals in order to reach the level. But it depends why he's doing these goals. If he's doing these goals because it's necessary for the situation in order to reach the enjoyment, which does take a while. I mean, Torah is not something like other sciences. There are many ins and outs, and until you know how to put together a sugya, is a very difficult thing. Take a few years, right? But as long as a person is doing it, because these goals, because they're necessary, that's one thing. But if he's doing it because goals are a compulsive part of his nature, and he simply cannot enjoy himself, cannot allow himself that frame of mind where he can relax and just enjoy the beauty of the Chachma, you see, then he is a sick person. He is suffering from a serious chuli nefesh. And he can't have any enjoyment out of the learning. It just becomes another burden. He becomes unhappy, further unhappy, just like he can't enjoy the other pleasures of life. And he will never be able to achieve the level of perfection of Torah Lishma. So what I want to point out is that this Rambam is really, that is not so, just so simply, Rambam is really pointing to a very important concept. Philosophical premise over here, psychological premise, that really is at the heart of what perfection consists of, and shows you precisely why, I think if applied to our society, why we suffer in our society. Because of the fact that there was a total distortion. The distortion, like the Rambam mentions, comes from the Amim. But the Amim have affected not just themselves, they've affected us too. And that's why the Rambam is the only one that gave him Musishmos on, that gives you Mus and tells you that you must enjoy yourself. Mention one thing. You have to realize the subtle influences of a society. And I mentioned this once in my show. But the thing is that I give you an illustration. I mean, you see what the Torah says with Shechat al Nefesh. What does the Torah say? Shechat al Nefesh. It says because he didn't drink yayin. What does it mean? He didn't drink yayin. It doesn't mean grape juice. It means yayin means wine. So apparently, it would seem and clear cut that if a person doesn't drink wine, a little bit of intoxication, so then he's chatal nefesh. So in other words, if a person relaxes and has a drink, the Torah considers this to be a good thing. I mean, is that what the Pasuk says or not? Mesha chatal nefesh. But you take a look in our society, you will find that most people would frown upon that. See? It's a bad thing. They'll frown upon that. And that's because there you could see, that's why you had the whole prohibition thing, and there you could see that the subtle influences of the philosophy of the alien society, how it affects you. Somebody will tell you, oh, I had a drink, I just right away, drink. It's a bad thing. I'm not trying to encourage drinking, but I'm trying to tell you, no, that Yahadis looks at it. Yeah, the way Yahadis looks at it. On the contrary, Chazal used to eat with their meals, used to drink wine. It was considered a good thing. Well, that's why you can't paska. You can't paska locha, shikras, after. Can't do, that's why you don't say, Bechas Kahanim for mincha. Fine. But it was not viewed as a bad thing. Not to get drunk, but to have a little intoxication is not considered a bad thing. Like, well, I tell you, the way you laugh at it shows you that you're influenced by society. It's distorted. Just wanted to give an illustration. People are afraid to, like doctors say, they found that now, they maintain that, it could be they'll change this next month, but right now they say that it's good for the cholesterol to have 2 ounces a day. Sounds like 3. But anyway. But the doctors say that they don't prescribe it to their patients because they don't want them to become alcoholics. See? This is the philosophy. The philosophy is keep people away from enjoyments because that's the way you prevent overindulgence. This is the craziest. This is exactly the opposite. If you would allow people to have enjoyment, there would be no need for the overindulgence. The overindulgence is many times a result because of the fact that they there's no satisfactions in life. It's on the contrary. I mean, let me just reiterate the question. The question was raised that how about we look up the person, we look up a person like Moshe Rabbeinu as a pinnacle of mankind, and here you see a person who's parish me'ishto, doesn't have any sexual interest. By the way, I mean, it was only towards the end of his life that he was allowed to do this. But the he was very old, but he wasn't physically old. But the it was only towards the end of his life, talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, that's the highest possible that man can reach. But the question was ramified a little bit. Modified. What the rabbi himself says that the nefesh habahami of man is the lowly part of man. He says this in the Shemona Prakam. He says it in the Mor Nevuchim. And this is a part that we should try to get away from. So how can we say over here encourage people to enjoy the nefesh habahami, to involve themselves in the nefesh habahami? That's the question. What is the answer?
I think that.
Yeah, the answer is like this. The answer is that there's two things. The thing is this, that a person, that again is a flaw of our society, that we can't be realistic with our emotions and with our value system. In other words, if we maintain that the nefesh of Bahami is a lower part of man, that immediately to us means we have no nefesh of Bahami. We have to deny that we have one. That is the unrealistic approach of the society we find ourselves in. See, but that's not what the approach of Torah is. The approach of Torah is like this: a man has to know what he is. What a human being is. A human being is someone that has like the Chazal say, is a combination of a malach and a behema. It's the intellect and the instinctual. That's what he is. He has to recognize what he is, and he has to live according to what he is. But this does not mean that he should fail to recognize that the part in him that really is divine is the part of Chachma. But it doesn't mean, just because he recognizes that the Chachma part is the part that is the highest part, doesn't mean that he should therefore deny that he has the other part. That's an absurdity. That's a total denial of reality. Of course, some people might find it difficult to accept that the only part that really has value is the Chachma part, yet they're attached to a physical part. The reason why they find it difficult to accept is because of what we said before. Because the whole society is based upon the self-glorification accomplishment, and it's beneath his dignity to accept the reality that he's a physical human being. That is very bad. That's an unrealistic thing. A person, you see, but you'll say that a person can't be comfortable with that view. Why? Because if the main thing is the chachma, so then how could I admit that I have a physical lowly part that's going to decompose in the earth? It's nothing. The answer is that Yadus requires that you recognize that reality. They recognize that's the case. Afani b'chaya kavachav misasi. The you say kind of social mirror. It's a person is. That's what a person has to recognize what he is. So while he recognizes there is a divine element, which is very high, and which is the only part of man that is great, he has to recognize his true station in life, which is that he is nevertheless composed of a physical part also, which is not so divine, and which is not so great. But that's the way. That's the being that he is. If it hurts him to accept that fact, I say naturally it would hurt a person, of course. But a large part of the reason of why we can't accept what we are is because of the fact that we have this imperfection in general in our society, which prevents a person from accepting anything which will lower his esteem. He's only concerned about things which raise his esteem in his own eyes or in other people's eyes. And that's why he can't accept that reality. True, of course, the Rambam is right. Definitely there's no question about it. Nefesh HaBahami is the lowest part of man. No question about it. It's Nefesh HaBahami. The only part that's high is the other nefesh asichli, the highest part. That's right, that's true, that's the tzelem elokim. But that's what we are. And we have to deal with it realistically and deal with it accordingly. Is it painful to recognize what we are? Maybe it is. But the point is that the person must look at it realistically. If he doesn't look at it realistically, he can only hope for one thing, for a total tragedy. He'll never be able to be successful. Never be able to be successful in terms of his achieving his state, the proper state. See? Exactly. Exactly. Then you can never reach happiness. It's an impossibility. So that's really the philosophy of the Rambam. That's the philosophy of the Rambam. The person would glorify the Nefesh HaBahami, then he would be, that would be the alien philosophy. To glorify the Nefesh HaBahami, there were those Epicureans. They glorified Nefesh HaBahami. It was a systematic thing. Nefesh HaBahami is the main part of man. That Yadus is against. Nefesh HaBahami is not the main part of man, not the most essential part, but he has the Nefesh HaBahami. He has to be honest with it. The question of Moshe Rabbeinu is what Naftali said. That Moshe Rabbeinu was on a very high level, true. The epitome, yes. But the point is, it wasn't because he abstained from physical because it was a painful thing to him. He was harming himself by abstention. There was a case of a man who was on such a level where the abstention was not a harm. On the contrary, it would have been painful for him to be involved in the physical because it would be taken away from his enjoyment of the metaphysical. You see? So he was on a different... What the Rambam is not saying over here, that we should try to indulge in the Nefesh HaBahami for the sake of the Nefesh HaBahami. That's wrong. As I said before, the main part of man is definitely Nefesh HaSichli. No question about that. But a person who maintains that the abstention or doing harm to the Nefesh HaBahami is a good, is a person who has that idea, is living a false life. Living a false life. And Moshe Rabbeinu was a natural thing. On the contrary, the more a person can partake of the higher element, he certainly should do it. No question about it. Exactly. But that's not a disruption there. He's working as an organized whole, because his whole nature is leading to that type of enjoyment. That's a different thing altogether. That's a spiritual enjoyment. Okay. Whether Moshe Rabbeinu with the Nevi'im had a different nature or not, the Machlokas Kuzri maintains that Nevi'im it's a different qualitatively differentiated nature, or is it simply a quantitative thing? But just corroborating our view, I mentioned the Pesukim Zmiris Lechukecha and Lewis Rosh Hashiashui. So the point is that if you don't have that frame of mind, and this society really does not permit such a frame of mind because of the high premium it places on accomplishment, so the person could never be in that frame of mind which lends itself to Torah Lishma. And we mentioned also, and we said that the Rambam is really is giving Musar. His Musar is that a person should really enjoy himself. There's a Chazal also. And Ram mentions a Chazal from the Dharm, right? Remember? What was the Chazal that Ram mentions this from the Dharm? He says, Nazir was one, but there was another one that he said was astounding, that he mentions, what was the one? You want a Dharm, hold on a second. Slowly. Yeah, that's right. The Chazal talk against people who make nedarim and shruas, and he says the Rambam says the achinisharim kamo asirim, until they remain like people who are bound, tied. You see, the shamar malashezer ravida b'shem Rabbi Yitzchok loy dayach mashi asra Torah elo shata osur alecha dvar macherim. He says the zehu ha'inyan she'eskano b'diuk b'litosfus alecha sanim. So this is the concept that we were speaking about precisely. Namely, that a person puts himself in a state where he's psychologically tied up and he can't enjoy life, so then this is against the Torah. Well, Dayach Masher Asa Torah. There's also a Yerushalmi that the Mesilas Yesharim quotes that says that a person who is chayef every fruit that he doesn't partake of in this world, every enjoyment, he's chayef. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is machayef him for it. Is machayev him? We wouldn't think. Yes, a fruit person walks by and sees a fruit in the tree and doesn't eat it. I mean, he doesn't partake of that enjoyment. So God is machayev him. The Yerushalmi says, machayev him. What do you mean machayev him? Why we wouldn't think that there would be? That actually God gives him an onus for that, a punishment for not enjoyment. I mean, to us it sounds like a strange thing. It sounds strange to us because of the way we're raised and because of the way we're influenced. And what we are influenced mainly our concept, our outlook on life is really formed essentially by like the Rambam mentions, the umos, Christian asceticism and fanaticism, which really does not wish to recognize. That's basically vainglory, that a person doesn't wish to recognize what he is, and that he's a human being, and that he, certain enjoyments are a part of his life, and he can't, he wants to think he's not, he doesn't want to recognize what he is, what his nature is, what his true nature is. Wants to be a malach, wants to be something that's in fantasy. This is based in reality. Reality demands that we have certain nature, we recognize certain things that we need, certain psychological pleasures, physical pleasures. Of course, this doesn't mean that they don't have their place in terms of a value system. But this is what the Rambam says. Okay. Rabbi Rambam, a Rambam in the Sefer Precious, gives a very lengthy description of what exactly Precious consists of. Okay? The Rebbe Avraham ben Rambam's description of Precious is really a very interesting one. It shows a tremendous insight into psychology, human psychology. Very remarkable. I mean, it's remarkable that the time you're talking about, the time that he wrote this, the concepts that he touches on, it's really an amazing amazing how he did it. But the it's worthwhile to read through. It's a long thing, but it's very worthwhile for a person to read through. It talks about a person's self-love and his overestimation of the self. There's amazing concepts there. But the when he gets into the into what Precious actually is, he says that he says, for instance, a person who is on the level of Precious. He says a person who decides to go in the level of Precious, he says, must minimize slowly the amount of time that he spends with the people of his family. He says until he reaches the point where he has no tie really with anybody in the world, in an ordinary sense, and that's his wife, his children, except insofar as he supports them, his father or his mother, and he says he has really no relationship, inherent relationship with them at all. And then he goes on and he says he has to reach the point where what he eats, he only eats things that just sustain him. And he doesn't partake at all of any type of enjoyment of food. Just a matter of sustenance. He mentions, he says, in the place that he lives, his house, is just really nothing more than a shelter. That's it. And he brings Rias from the Nevi'im. Brings Rias from the Nevi'im from Eliyahu Navi, where he built this little shack. He says, that's all the Nevi'im lived in. You see, Eliyahu wore a very coarse garment, poor clothes. Person shouldn't be involved. He goes through every aspect of life. And he says, he even goes so far as to say that the person reaches the level where he has no sexual intercourse. And he's really like Benazai, Choshka Nafshi Batara, and he has nothing whatsoever. He says, that's really the level of a Navi. And he says, as a matter of fact, he asks a question, why Moshe Rabbeinu was married. And he says that was just because of, for the Am, for others, other reasons he gives. But really, essentially, he says, the Chacham is completely removed from any physical type of involvement, physical or psychological, in this world. And that is the level that a person should strive to reach. And he tells you how to do it. He gives you advice on how a person should do it. But it's interesting. He says the only way to do it, he says, is to do it slowly. Very slowly. Slow. Step by step. He says... He says that the only way to do it... He says, is for instance, if a person has eats a four-course meal, So he should minimize it first, get it down to 3 courses. Then after a while, get it down to 2. Until he reaches a point where all he eats is just bread and water and just a matter of sustenance. That's the advice he gives. Also, he starts off in the beginning, any type of feeling of self-importance or honor or any type of this type of thing, of course, is, he has to remove himself from that. I mean, he hits both. He's very, you see his insight in the way he knows, his knowledge of the psychological factors that are important to a person. It's an amazing thing. I mean, when I read it, I was really a little astonished. The way his a real tremendous sensitivity for it'll be like a person just wrote this now. I mean, knows everything how the person works. And it's interesting to read this because you see there really there's absolutely no difference. Of course, you know it. There's no difference in man between, even though he finds himself in a modern society. But the truth of the matter is, the psychological is exactly the same. His description is very beautiful. But at any rate, that's what he holds. That's Rav Ramana Rambam's Shita. And you know, Rav Ramana Rambam carried on the Shita of his father. And he was very much, as a matter of fact, the whole when they put his father's Sfarim and Chayrim and everything, he was always called to defend his father's position. Rambam's position. He held everything that the Rambam wrote. I mean, he understood and he would explain. I mean, that was really his position, just like explaining the Rambam. And it's interesting that the degree of precious that he goes to, it's unbelievable. Okay. Anybody have a question? Yes.
One would think that there's a contradiction between the between what the Rambam says and between what the Rabbi Avraham and Rambam says. But there's, from what I told you, there's one point that you should pick up right away that you see that it's not that it can't be a contradiction. But I tell you, Rabbi Avraham and Rambam held very much from what his father should do was. And it's interesting. But the way that he says to reach precious is a slow process, whereas the Rambam says that the way to reach precious is to go to the other extreme. The Rambam says that how does a person reach precious? He says if he finds that he's too much of a Baal Taiva, so then he goes to the other extreme and precious is right in the middle. That's what the Rambam says in his Shemona Prakim.
Yeah, but he moves back.
Here, one second. No, he goes to the opposite side. If he's too much an ascetic, he has to go to the opposite side of indulging himself. And then he gets to the middle. Whereas Rabbi Avraham and Rambam says, no, he says the only way you get to precious is slow, step-by-step progression. You see right away that he's talking about a different thing. Then in the end of the chapter on precious, he asks 2 questions. He says that how is it possible to understand what the Torah says about the Yitzchak, because when the Torah says about Yitzchak that he wanted to give the brachas, so it says he said haveli matamim. Haveli matamim vavili v'ochela bavur tvorecha nafshi b'ter mamas. He says, now a person that apparently Yitzchak was a person that enjoyed delicacies. So he says, what kind of a precious is this? The man's waiting for a good steak. This is precious. And they're talking about Yitzchak Avinu. He says, this is a very big question. So he says, he answers as follows. He answers as follows. You see, well, the thing is, I guess, if you would imagine, I mean, could you imagine, it's difficult to imagine a person that's a parish, that his son knows, the man, he knows, his son who lives with him all the time knows that he's a parish. The man's a total ascetic, has no shachas to Tanug Elam Hazar. Now, Esav wasn't a dummy. Esav was a very intelligent person. He's going to tell him, he's going to say, look, bring me the delicious food that you know that I like. I mean, when do you eat food? When do you like? What do you like? I mean, what do you mean, the little bread and water? Is that what I'm supposed to do? What are you talking about? Wouldn't make any sense. The whole thing wouldn't make any sense, Tessa. You know what I mean? I mean, to say that that Yitzchak was only doing it for Esav, it's a very sharp idea. But practically speaking, it really wouldn't work out if you're speaking about a man that's an ascetic. I mean, even for us, if you'd imagine like a Moshe Feinstein telling his son, get me those delicious steaks that I always liked. And they say, oh, what? What are you talking about? Run down the store and get me some pizza. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. Sounds funny to us. You're talking about Yitzhak Avinu. Doesn't make any sense. He might be trying to create a positive bond, but how could he deal with something that has no relationship to the man's whole tzura, to his whole essence? You know what I mean? No, because Asif. So what do you do? Put it under his shirt? Yeah. It's very hard to say that it was a ruse. It's very hard to say that because I mean Asif was no dummy. Asif knew his father, and to say that Yitzchak carried on an act all the time to eat these matamim in order that Asif should to satisfy Asif, it doesn't seem the way in the Torah. Because it seems on the contrary that Yitzchak simply believed that didn't pull any type of hoax on Esau. He was honest and he was sincere with him. You don't find anywhere that he was true. He wasn't the type of conniving person, Yitzchak. Yitzchak was very straight. Rivka was the one that was conniving. Well, Yitzchak was very straight. So the whole thing sounds funny. I mean, here he's telling him to bring these delicious foods that he likes. So he answers like this. So he says, that's his question. Madu bikish yitzchak matam me Esau Esau. Below askin and baatzmo, the ethic bazei. He said like this. So he said like this. I don't know. That's another question. One second. First question is what he wanted the matama for altogether. And not only that, he says, why he tied the bracha with the matama. And not only that, he besides the matama, they brought him wine. Bikesh matamim v'yakov hosev aleihem yayin. Shenema v'yove lo yayin v'yesh. He says, so somebody will say, is it possible to have any greater attachment to Tanug Olam Hazeh than to have such a love for these for the good foods and wine? He says, and the second question he asked is, why is it that the bracha is gashmias? That's the second question. He asked that question. We one time spoke about it. Okay. So the so he says like this. He says you have to understand that the neshama of a person, the soul of a person is his connection between himself and God. He says and you have to understand that there is no doubt that the man's neshama, the neshama of the Navi is dependent upon his body all his life, and since it's dependent upon his body, he says if the guf becomes weak, so then it will affect his soul and it'll affect his nevuah. That's what he says and nevuah is the height of perfection, and nevuah can never devolve upon a person unless he is in a perfect state. And you see Raya from the fact that that the Nevi'im used to have them play instruments of music before the Nevuah came to them. So yeah, they shouldn't be sad. So v'lachene l'fnei Nevi'i Yisrael nevel v'sof v'cholil v'kinor v'hema misnabim k'moshim v'vur b'sefer Shmuel. So he says like this. He says, and my father explains this in the Pirush Mishnayos, in the seventh parak, in the Pirush Mishnayos of Avos. So you see, he learned this. So anyways, he says like this. He says, now Yitzchak, when he became old, his body became weak. Just like it says in the beginning of the Parsha. Vayiki zokein Yitzchak vatechena ein of meros. He couldn't see anymore. Which indicates not just the blindness, but his whole body was deteriorated. So he says, and yeah, he says that. He says it's just like his eyes deteriorated, the rest of his body deteriorated, right? He says that he knew then that his soul is not in the state of simcha. And he says, and this bracha that he gave was not a regular bracha, like a person ordinarily blesses somebody, his friend or his offspring. It's not a regular bracha, but this bracha was through nevuah, through Ruach HaKadosh. He says the proof is where it says later that he made a mistake. He said Gam Baruch Yeh. When he found out that it was Yaakov instead, he said Gam Baruch Yeh. What do you mean Gam Baruch Yeh? What is now retracted and give it to Esau? So obviously he knew that this bracha was being given in a different type of a state. It's not just a regular bracha. It's given through Ruach HaKodesh. And once it was given, that's it. So he says that that's why he says Yitzchak wanted these matamim. He wanted them, the matamim was not for Taivas Aguf. He says in order to restore to himself that certain balance so that he should be happy in order that the Nevuah should be able to fall upon him. And that's why he said, Haveli matamim, the Pasuk says, Ba'avur tevorechecha nafshi. The Pasuk says right after that. Haveli matamim, Ba'avur tevorechecha nafshi b'terem amos. In order that I should be able to give the bracha. I can't give the bracha without Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh can't fall upon me unless I'm in the perfect state. And now I'm very old and weak, so I need the matamim in order to counterbalance it. That's what Rav Ramban says. Okay? Now from this answer, you see the answer to the question that we raised. So the question we raised was, how come the Rambam says that a person should enjoy life? And here, Rambam says that a person should be such an ascetic to the point where he has no shaychus to anything of a physical or psychological nature, of any type of enjoyment or satisfaction. The only kesher he has is the chachma. The answer is like this. The answer was speaking in two realms. One realm is the realm of psychological well-being. Psychological well-being means a person must have a healthy psyche. That's number one. The second realm that we're discussing is the philosophical realm. There are two types of precious. There's psychological precious and there's philosophical precious. They're two different things altogether. What the Rambam is describing in Avos is psychological precious. What is psychological precious? Psychological precious means where the psyche is in a healthy state. And the Rambam explains where the psyche is in a healthy state, it doesn't partake of any extremes. Neither extreme taiva, nor extreme asceticism. Neither is a healthy state. It's not a healthy sign. If the person is in the extremes, you know there's something wrong psychologically with him. So the Rambam says that a person's psyche, if it is to be healthy, must be in the middle. As we explained last time, if a person is in extreme, it means he's involved in compulsions, basically. Involved in compulsions. So that's not a healthy sign. In order for a person to be happy, it shouldn't be extreme. So the Rambam in Avos is telling us what the healthy psyche is. That's what his description is. That's what he's describing there. Without a healthy psyche, the person can never reach perfection. It's impossible. There's something wrong. Once a person has a healthy psyche, then he is ready for philosophical precious. Philosophical precious means where he substitutes for his ordinary enjoyments, he substitutes higher enjoyments. Enjoyments of the mind, enjoyments of the Tzelem Elokim, you see. That's philosophical precious. But that process is not really to be identified with asceticism. So asceticism is where the person is psychologically unhealthy. He's trying to use one element of the psyche more than the other. He's trying to run to the side of the superego and away from the side of the id. That's unhealthy. In real philosophical precious, the person is not in any state of extremes. His psyche is healthy. But now he's substituting for the tanuge olam hazeh, he is getting enjoyment, psychological enjoyment, from a higher thing, a higher realm. The realm of machshava, the realm of thought. And he's not suffering. It's a conversion. Moshe Rabbeinu, by not having any of these pleasures, is not in a state of suffering. He's not in a state of pain. On the contrary, he's in the state of the greatest bliss. Because the truth of the matter is that those enjoyments are far greater than the physical enjoyments that we experience. And this This is something that the Torah says, and it's something that that philosophers who have reached that level also attest to, and also state. And anyone who experiences that, those who have experienced it, is very rare in mankind to have that experience. But those who have experienced it have recorded their experiences and have spoken, written about the fact that that type of enjoyment is far greater, and why it is far greater. But that's a different thing. Now, the proof of it is what is really what it would really be a test to see whether a person is an ascetic or whether he's philosophically perfected. It would seem, on the surface, it looks the same. They're both not partaking of physical pleasures. There is one test, and the test is really the case of Yitzchak that he mentions. What is the test? The test is how he looks at the physical pleasures. If the person looks at the physical pleasures as something which is beneath him, and something bad, evil, low, something to be ashamed of, you see, something that he doesn't partake of, something that he wants to deny he has a relationship to, then he's an ascetic. But if he looks at the physical pleasures on the contrary, like the Rambam says, those who deny the physical, it's as if God is a sonei aguf, like God hates the body. Isn't that an absurdity? God who created the body with such fantastic chachma and created a whole system where man can live and satisfy all the complex needs of his body, that the one who created this hates it and despises it? That's an absurdity. If the person looks at the guf and the physical pleasures with disdain, then he's an ascetic. If, on the contrary, he looks at those pleasures and he understands, on the contrary, the greatness of how everything works together and how beautiful it is and how necessary it is for the guf to have these pleasures, how it works together. But, however, he recognizes, but there's another realm which is higher, and he partakes of the higher realm. Then he is really in what Yadis considers a parish. Philosophical preachers. He's involved in philosophical preachers. The biggest proof is Yitzchak. Because you see, a person who looks with disdain at the physical pleasures cannot say, bring me a delicious steak and I'll enjoy myself and some wine and then I'll be able to give you a bracha. He would be above his dignity. I'm going to be reduced to the... He would mourn the fact that he's reduced to the level where he has to partake of physical pleasure. Say, oh, look what happened. I'm down at the level of a behemoth. See? That is a person who's an ascetic. But Yitzchak was not. Yitzchak, on the contrary, Yitzchak was a parish of the highest level. He didn't have disdain for the physical pleasures. He recognized that he's very fortunate that he's in a world where he partakes of something which is far greater, which is eternal. The eternal world of ideas and chachma, the physical world is not on that level. The value system, a philosophical value system, tells you immediately that you can't compare the two realms. But, however, if it's necessary to be in that state of mind, if it's necessary for me to partake and to enjoy the physical, then he is able to enjoy the physical. He has the ability to enjoy the physical. That was the level of Yitzchak. See, that's the difference. That's the difference. The problem today is that since we are raised in a society in which there is only asceticism, so we confuse the perfected person with an ascetic because we don't perceive what he really is. You see? But in Yadis, as you know, perfection is not simple. Asceticism is a very simple phenomenon. Perfection is a little more difficult. And the Nevi'e HaEmes were not ascetics. They were involved in philosophical preachers. It's a totally different thing. How do you move from one state to another? See, the Rabbi Rambam, and Rambam does say that in order to move from one state to another, a person has to restrict himself. There are restrictions. It's not just a natural progression. But there are restrictions that a person must impose upon himself in order to move himself to a higher state. But that is not in contradiction. That doesn't mean asceticism. That means where a person removes the the psychological enjoyment that his energy is attached to. He removes it from there, because in order for the energy to attach itself to the higher sphere, it has to be removed from the lower sphere. So that's why you have to impose these restrictions. But the imposition of the restrictions is not the same thing as we imagine when we think of the idea of imposing restrictions. See, it's not for the sake of restrictions, and it's not a painful thing the way we conceive it, because we conceive it as a painful thing, because to us it's just simply an ascetic restriction. So we dislike it. On the contrary, the person who moves the way Ramana Ram describes is not... The problem is, when you read these things with the eye, with your own eyes, that and you yourself really have a distorted view of what perfection is, you project onto the scene certain false notions that you carry. That's not the case. If you look clearly, you look carefully, you'll see that it's a totally different thing. It's a totally different thing. The pain that we sense in asceticism is because we do not understand the process of replacement, of substitution, which really is going on. It's a different... Of course, the person has to impose the restrictions, but he's in a different frame of mind than a person who's facing a situation where simply he's going to remove himself from pleasures. He's not. He's facing a situation where he's removing himself from certain pleasures, but he's receiving a greater return from the other ones, and he knows this. You see. So it's not a painful situation the way we perceive it. Yes? How a person can go on as an ascetic is a very simple psychological phenomenon. Because what he does is, he doesn't have any enjoyments. I have to use the terms, the psychological terms, I don't know, id and super ego. He doesn't enjoy the enjoyments of the id because he's removing himself from that. But he has, and replaces it with the enjoyments of super ego, which is a constant awareness of his own greatness. That's precisely when a person enjoys accomplishment, what does he enjoy? He enjoys the sense of accomplishment. This is how great he is. This is part of his this is an enjoyment. He's substituting one type of enjoyment for another. So he can go on. As a matter of fact, there's a joke that they say, the Bali Musa. Bali Musa were very sensitive when it came to psychology. That was really the Shita San Musa was a psychological Shita. It came from the Chachamim, came from people who had insight into human nature. It wasn't from the Amoniyam. The Rav one time distinguished between the Chassidus and Musa. He said Chassidus came from the Hamoneyam. Came from the people who were the ignoramuses. That's really, really, that's how it started. Because they were attracted to some of the ideas. But Musa came from the intellectuals. Musa came from the intellectuals in Europe.
You're talking about from
Rasul Salanta. Rasul Salanta, yeah.
Yeah, but that's not what you have today.
Sorry, what do you mean it's not what you have today? Yeah, you didn't know the real Bala Musa. The real Bala Musa were not ascetics. They weren't ascetics.
I can just tell from the literature.
Yeah, you know, because you're familiar with the from Chavetz Chaim in Slobodka, right. But if you ever met the old Slobodka's personality, it was a different thing. They dressed nicely, beautiful, sharp clothing, and they spoke well, and they smoked. I mean, they weren't ascetics. They weren't ascetics. It was an intellectual sheet. It was an intellectual sheet. To describe it best, I would say it was a sheet of human sensitivity. That's really what it was. Very sensitive about it. What their emphasis was on Bein Odom L'Chavero, that a person should be sensitive to another person's emotions and should in a very subtle, they had like subtle concepts. For instance, I'll give you an example. Let's give you an example. It was based on Chazal. It wasn't just an ignorant sheet of asceticism. You'd be wrong to call it that, because it was a very intellectualized sheet. For instance, they work on certain things. Well, all the type of things they work on, like for instance, when you see somebody in the morning, you greet somebody. So say good morning. How are you? There's a Chazal that says Hal Bein Shinayim Mechalav. Pasuk says Hal Bein Shinayim Mechalav. That the white teeth are from milk. One of the brachas in the Shiftei Ka. So there's a chazal that says, that learns like this, Hal Bein Shinayim, when you show your teeth, when you smile, show your teeth, Mei Cholav. It's better than giving somebody milk. So chazal says, it means like this, it means that if you see a person is very hungry and you give him milk, so that's a great thing, right? But if you smile, it's even more. So the Bali Musa would see Bali Musa would take something like this, and they just give you an idea of their approach. And they analyze it. They say, could you imagine a person starving? He's hungry, he's starving. And he comes to your house, and you give him a glass of warm milk. I mean, what greater benefit could you give a person? A man feels, I mean, you're saving his life. You imagine how he feels. I mean, how good he feels. This is really the height of human kindness. Now, how ben shinayim, this still is nothing compared to if you see a person in the morning, and instead of just saying, hello, how are you? You give him a warm smile, and he feels great. This is even better. How ben shinayim is even greater than chala. So you see, really, what Chazal are saying, what's the pshat in the Chazal, philosophically? See, they don't bother to define it as much philosophy, but they would work on this type of thing. They work on this type of thing. And then what they would do is, they would try to work on themselves to make sure not to overlook a small thing like this, which you think is nothing. No, they'd work on it. So you see somebody in the morning, you greet him, give him a full, warm greeting. That feeling, that inner feeling that he's going to receive from your warmth is going to make him feel so good and make his day. See? You don't realize how a little thing like that can affect a person. That was really Shita Samosa. It was a very sensitive and it was intellectualized Shita. Really, what Chazal is saying is that the psychological needs of a person are far more important than the physical. Chalav represents the physical. But Halbein Shinayim represents psychological. You make a person feel so much better psychologically, even if he's starving, but that is psychological happiness is much more important to him. That's really what the Chazal mean. So, this was really the Shita Samosa. It was a very interesting Shita, and it was a Shita that, like I said, I mean, emphasized in very carefully in minute detail human sensitivity, and it was a worked out plan of how a person should raise himself to the level where he's involved in being very careful and considerate of another person's feelings and emotions. Tremendous emphasis on Benin Lachavera. It was really an interesting, very interesting Shita Samosa. You should really, very good, very good. Absolutely. What you should do is you should read that we have a Sfarim, Tnuas Samosa, all about it. It's in the back room. You really should spend some time going through it. It's very good. We saw Salanta, the Alta from Slabatka. That's really where it starts, with the Alta from Slabatka. And they have practically, I mean, they give the whole, they don't have all the shmoz and the things, but they have the main drift of the Shita. It's very interesting. So, yes. So they recognized the human ego. I mean, they picked it up. I mean, it was something that they didn't see. So the famous story is about the somebody one time asked Rabbi Saul Salanta that there was a tzaddik that came to the city, and the man doesn't eat anything. Just doesn't. He's such a parish. He doesn't eat anything, and he sits and learns all day. So they asked Rabbi Saul Salanta, how is this possible that a man, a human being, doesn't eat, hardly eats, and he sits and learns all day, and he continues to exist, and months go by, he looks fine. So Rabbi Saul Salanta said, where does this man stay? Where does he live? Says he stays mainly in the shul, and everybody walks in and sees him and says hello to him. So he says, that's what he lives from. So they recognized the concept of a trade-off. It's a trade-off. He doesn't